It's time for the Secrets of Staffing Success from Haley Marketing. Candid conversations with entrepreneurs and thought leaders in staffing and recruiting.
How do you guys differentiate yourselves from your competitors? Is ACA a threat or an opportunity for the staffing industry? How can the staffing industry improve the candidate experience? What will be keeping you up at night over the next 2 years?
And here's your host, Todd Lewandowski.
Welcome to another great episode of the Secrets of Staffing Success, our first new episode of 2018. We did have our best of episode from 2017 a couple weeks ago, so if you want to check that out, it's up on our website, haleymarketing.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, and on Spotify now. And at haleymarketing.com has all of our past episodes as well. Well, our guests this week on the Secrets of Staffing Success are the owners of 32 at-work personnel franchises spread across 6 different states. And it's my pleasure to welcome in Marty and David Luttrell. Guys, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you, Todd. It's good to be here.
Well, what I like to do as we start off the show here is give you guys an opportunity to give us your 60-second elevator pitch on at-work personnel services. So go right ahead, gentlemen.
Okay. Well, we have been in business since 1993. This is actually our 25th anniversary this year. And we've grown. I bought the office in Greenville, Tennessee back in 1993. Bought out on no payment, and Marty came on board a year later. And we have grown to 32 locations over over 25 years. So, yeah, we're commercial staffing. We have manufacturing, primarily manufacturing, industrial positions, and the sector that we service, and also office and clerical.
Yeah, and I want to kind of want to start with that growth. 25 years, it's a long time to be in the business, but really, I mean, you guys grew pretty quickly at the start, and, you know, 32 offices over 25 years is very impressive. What were some of the biggest growing pains that you've experienced in your growth to those 32 offices?
One of the biggest challenges is when you get offices further away from you, and it's tough to have much of a presence. It is managing those offices well and keeping them focused and within your core values and having that company culture in those outlying areas.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. You know, when you think about the McDonald's model, the great franchise model is, you know, no matter where you are in the country, you can go into a McDonald's and they're all the same and you can kind of get the same experience. Is that something that you guys always strive for across all of your offices to make sure there's always that continuity among all the offices?
Yes, I'd say it is. That is definitely a challenge, you know, having the right people in place that fit in with your culture, that believe in your core values and buy into your vision and mission statement. So that's always a challenge. So to have the A players and B players and keep them on the team, and those that are C players, D players, either bring them up to at least B players or move them out of the company, if they can't perform as expected.
Over those 32 years, what would you say has been your most successful growth strategy that you guys have implemented?
Well, we've done a couple of things. A lot of our early growth was done just organically. We would have a client that would ask us to service another one of their locations. For example, we had an office in Knoxville. We were working with a particular client down there, and they asked us if we would serve as a client up in Roanoke, and that gave us an opportunity to open up an office up there. But another very effective strategy for us has been looking for opportunities with acquisitions and bringing our economies of scale to some of those companies that we were able to buy that didn't have those, and then making those offices even more successful than what they were when we bought them.
You know, on this show in the past, we've had on husband and wife teams, and I know you guys are brothers. What have been some of the challenges of working with your brother all these years?
Well, I think it's.
I like the silence there. That was good.
We're very different personalities. I'm sure I can say something. David can say something too. To that is I'm a very big picture focused, and also like to take risks. And he's not so much. And so I think overall we balance each other out, because in the end we always tend to come to the solution, you know, together, even though it sometimes takes some time to get there.
Yeah, I will say Marty and I, we do complement each other. Our personalities are different. Marty, as he mentioned, he's more the big picture person, and I work and I'm more into the details, so to speak. But our strengths help make up for each other's weaknesses.
We talk a lot about on the show about the candidate experience, and you know that's really been kind of the major talking point of the staffing industry as a whole for the past couple of years now, is how to build that candidate experience, because there's such a shortage of great qualified candidates right now. What have been some of your most successful tactics to attracting qualified candidates to At Work?
Well, I would say job boards has definitely been beneficial. We've certainly invested plenty of money into that. Also, word of mouth, referrals has been very beneficial. Social media has been beneficial as well. So I'd say those are some of the top areas that has helped us get qualified talent for our positions.
And to add to that, years ago when we started, we pretty much used the newspaper was the major form of advertising. We did do some other forms of advertising here and there, but the newspaper was 80-90%. Nowadays, if you don't have a good mix of ways to attract candidates, and you're not doing a good job with your ads, writing your ads correctly, being more candidate centric with ad writing, and then the referrals. I mean, you just can't. I don't think companies will find the element of success unless they're able to work the referral level. And that is, you know, as you working with different candidates, or you're talking to people, just asking for those referrals and working it from that angle. In our business, that is the case, since most of our business is in entry level positions, we have to really tap into those markets.
Is it an emphasis to kind of create your candidates, your the ones you're working with right now, almost into brand ambassadors, where you know you have them out there and they're not only representing At Work, but they're also talking up At Work and talking it up to their friends and also, you know, using them on your social media strategies as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. We do. You know, of course, we do a lot of stuff on Facebook, give away a lot of t-shirts for people to wear and other At Work paraphernalia that can kind of spread the brand out there. And some of our clients actually, when our associates are on site, that's what they're required to wear is an At Work t-shirt.
I love that idea. I wish more staffing firms out there would do it, because I think that's such a really great tactic. You have this great pool of candidates, you know, use them to be your kind of walking billboard, so to speak, out there when they're on the job and when they're talking with their friends on social media. So I really like that you guys have taken that tactic on. Let's switch a little bit over to the client side and the business development side of things. For many years, you know, one of the dominant sales tactics in the staffing industry has been cold calling and the old dialing for dollars concept. What do you guys do differently, and what's worked and what hasn't worked over these past 25 years for you?
Well, we've certainly done our share of cold calling in the past. I mean, when I started business, that's all I did was cold calling.
Sure.
When I first started out, but it, you know, now you have to be more strategic, because years ago, 25 years ago, when I started and Marty came on board, he can attest to this, you know, most companies had receptionists. You walked in and there's a receptionist, you know, you may have a guard sack you had to go past. Many times you can maybe get a name from a guard if you're fortunate. But now many companies, you walk in the lobby and there's just a phone on the wall with maybe a directory to the HR department. And So you're lucky to ever reach anyone when you do dial their name. And so, or many times you may not know who you're calling. There may not be any directory there. So that's the new challenge when it comes to cold calls. So the other thing is LinkedIn, looking for people on LinkedIn and friending them on there and reaching out to them. And also, sending them messages on LinkedIn. And it comes down to networking and finding the right person and keep being persistent to get a hold of them.
Now, cold calling is not out. We are actually sure. Sales team still does cold calls, both, you know, cold calling can be done in person, you know, where you go out to the client company. A lot of the times, though, you do end up in the lobby having to call someone on the phone. Mm-hmm. But cold calling is also done by leaving a voicemail. And so all of those things have some impact. Casting a wide net, and then, working the networking, going to chamber functions, going to other types of organizations where you can meet, and if not meet the prospect themselves, you can meet someone that might know the prospect and can help you get in. So, yeah, I think there is more of that. LinkedIn is a good source, or at least it's a way to find out who you're calling on. I've used it myself. Sometimes I think the prospects will avoid you. You know, if they know that you're searching for them, so they won't readily agree to join your network.
Mm-hmm. What other kinds of ways do you guys use LinkedIn? Are you active in different groups in LinkedIn? Are you using the in-mail function? I think that has over the past couple of years kind of become a pretty dominant social media tactic in the staffing industry. I'm just curious how you guys specifically will use LinkedIn.
We use the in-mail function for sure. Yep. Most of our, I would say probably all of our, sales team uses the in-mail function. I use it myself to reach out, and we use it for recruiting purposes. Go on and do searches for people in particular with particular skills. Like if we're trying to hire somebody for our office, we might use LinkedIn, or for not just for our office, but for a skilled position that we're looking for at a particular client. LinkedIn has proven to be, pretty valuable resource.
Oh yeah. It's also been a good resource in the past to find talent, upper management positions and so forth.
We're going to take a real quick break. When we get back, we're going to ask Luttrell, what's the outlook for staffing in 2018? It's all coming up on the Secrets of Staffing Success.
This is David Cerns, CEO of Haley Marketing, and thanks so much for listening to Secrets of Staffing Success. If you have a question you'd like us to address or an industry star you'd like us to interview, please email us at info@HaleyMarketing, that's H-A-L-E-Y, marketing.com. Again, thanks for listening, and now let's head back to Todd.
You mentioned that you guys are pretty heavily in the industrial sector. What's the outlook for the industrial staffing sector for 2018?
I believe it's pretty bright. If you looked at the last survey that just came in a day or two ago on the news, said the vast majority of Americans feel like the economy is excellent right now. And the manufacturing seems to be growing, and the industrial, we have plenty of jobs available. So I believe 2018 will be a very good year.
Yeah, I think that the changes in the tax law have staved off a recession. My guess, and I could be wrong on this, I wouldn't have been surprised if there would have been a soft economy this year, but I think due to the tax law changes, that has made the outlook brighter. Doesn't mean that, 2019, that may happen then, because we definitely cycle. I think even with the tax law changes, there's still going to be cycles.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this year does look good. Nobody knows the future, of course, but it certainly looks better, especially when you hear about these companies bringing all this money back from overseas. I think. What was it I heard? Apple bringing in like $350 billion. Yeah. That's going to be a shot.
Yeah, several companies pouring a lot of money in the economy, the American economy. So, mm-hmm. I mean, close to our area here in Tennessee, I understand Amazon is looking to maybe open up a major fulfillment center.
Yeah, I think they got it narrowed down to the final 20 cities that are in the running there, and that's going to be a huge boost for whoever gets the winning bid there. That's going to be exciting to watch how that unfolds.
Yeah, so we're seeing a lot of our clients are still employing growth strategies. They're still hiring. A lot of people hiring right now. I don't think it's a problem finding a job. It's a problem. The problem is finding the people. That's why it's a candidate-centric market. You know, you have those market changes. It can be the client can be, you know, after 2008, 2009, 2010, candidates could, or clients, companies could pick and choose mm-hmm. who they want because there was a high unemployment rate and a lot of people looking, mm-hmm. more people looking than there were jobs. And so, but now it's kind of turned the other way.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at the other side of things. Where do you see maybe some of the biggest obstacles to success in 2018?
I would say for our industry, losses in workers' compensation can heavily affect us, especially, you know, since we are, for all intents and purposes, self-insured in the workers' comp arena. That can be can turn against you in a hurry, especially when you're working with the lower levels in the and the population of unemployment, because you know you don't have the best candidates to choose from. So you do have some risk you're taking on there in that area, and you know competition. But competition is always there. There is more competition since the economy is good. You know, when economies go bad, you usually, you know, there's a thinning down where, you know, services will leave the market because they just didn't have a good enough client base to stay in. So now there are a lot of staffing services in our markets. So there is a lot more competition than we've probably seen in a long time.
I believe 2018 will be a good year, not to say that there won't be some obstacles as we continue growing.
You had mentioned earlier about finding those A players to lead your offices. You know, like you guys said, there's only two of you, but there's 32 different offices that you guys manage. What are some of the keys to finding those great leaders amongst your organization?
Well, many times we promote from within, and we develop our people into leaders. So I think that we have quite a few long-term staff that have been with us for 10 plus years. And that's very beneficial. When you have long-term staff and, most of them, a vast majority of them are A, if not B, you know, A and B players. So, that's very beneficial on our growth of our company. They believe in what Marty and I do, and they believe in our values, and, so they want to continue growing with us and help contribute to the growth of our company.
And they can take over positions. For example, if we're located in Tennessee, as you know, and if we're purchasing an office, we're in the middle of a purchase right now of a location in California where we have a staff that's been with us for, how long has she been with us? 12 years, 15 mm-hmm. years? And she's going to be the regional manager of that office. Mm-hmm. So she can help to drive our culture in that location mm-hmm. as she spends time out there and so forth. So yeah, that's really the finding the A players. You got to find the people, I believe, that buy into your culture and your core values, and then you can train them, you know, if they have the ability to learn, then you can train them to do the rest.
You know, 25 years, we've mentioned this, you guys have been in the business. I guess we can consider you veterans of the staffing industry now. But where do you still go to find advice and to find inspiration in the staffing industry?
Well, you know, Marty and I, we both have been, have attended our share of we're both members of American Staffing Association and also staffing industry analysts. And, we attend the Staffing World and also the executive forum when possible. And we have met other people or consultants and to the staffing industry at these conferences and forums, and we have called them in, and that they have been very beneficial with our growth. In fact, we just met with someone today that has been here at our home office for the week, that has met with our staff and so forth and consulted with Marty and I, and we're working with another consultant as well. And as we scale up, we have to go outside and talk to other experts in the field and that have staffing industry experience and best practices, and they can relay that information to us. And hey, this is areas where your shortfalls, and this is areas where you need to improve on. And so it's been very beneficial to us. So as we work with these consultants in the industry, you know, it helps guide us through these minefields as we scale up.
Now, David and I believe that we don't have to be the smartest people in the room. We just got to surround ourselves with the smartest people.
So true.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's interesting, too, because when you talk about 32 different offices and you've got, you know, all these different managers that are taking care of these branches, you know, day-to-day operations for you guys, I'm sure there are some that are more vocal than others. And, you know, how do you manage that aspect of, well, you know, we have to do what's good for the group as a whole here, when you still have maybe some dissenting voices out there?
Well, we take everything into consideration. That's a good question. And it kind of makes you think, you know, okay, how do we do that? I think that we do sometimes customize things. We try to be fairly consistent across the board, and definitely with our core values, we're always consistent with that when it comes to things that maybe aren't different in one area than another. It's just like you know, the way that our structure is for all of our BDMs, our branch development people, business development people. Is not exactly the same. You know, markets are different. So the person that does sales in Chicago, for example, is gonna have a different metrics or something than somebody that sells in a smaller market in Virginia, for example. Not sure if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, absolutely. In terms of metrics, you know, what are some of the most important business metrics that you guys look at, you know, maybe even especially early on with a new branch to determine their success?
Are they profitable?
It's just that easy sometimes, right?
I agree with that.
Yeah, that's something we're always looking to refine and make sure, and then that we've got the right metrics. We talk about that a lot.
Are they making contribution margin right?
Yeah, are they making contribution margin? You know, what sales levels do they need to be at? What is their gross profit at? What is their gross profit goals? You know, we just went over some of this stuff with our management team and looking at every single office and setting their goals for this year. You know, what is their growth goal? How are they going to attain to that, and how are we going to measure that? Okay, these are the accounts we're going after. We're going to see how those things are going along. What do they have in the pipeline as far as new business coming in? What are some of the areas that they could be losing business in? And so you're measuring those things. You're measuring what the BDM, of course, is doing each week and the calls that they make and what your regional managers are doing and so forth. So there's several. Doesn't have to be a lot of metrics. We don't look at, you know, like dozens of things, but we look at some important things. How are unemployment rates trending? How are their workers' comp claims losses going? You know, what is their contribution margin as a percent of their total sales? What are their gross margins? Are they going up? Are they going down? And why? Those are the things that we look at on an ongoing basis.
Before we let you go, this has kind of become one of my favorite questions to ask in the dozen or so episodes of the show that we've done. If you could go back 25 years and give a younger version of yourself one piece of advice, what would it be?
Wow, 25 years. Well, Honestly, Charles, I did not have a business plan when I bought the office. It was going out of business. I was almost bankrupt, and And, you know, I was didn't have any operating capital of my own when I bought the office, and it was actually going under when I bought it. So I turned it around in 6 months. You know, I thought, I'm already at the bottom. There's nowhere but up. So that was my business plan, was just go out and make the calls and turn this office around. And all I cared about was to feed my family and make a living. I didn't put down on paper when my goal was to grow to 32 locations in 6 states in the next 25 years. All I could think was just survival, let's make a living, pay the bills for myself and my family. And then, of course, I brought Marty on board a year later. And and the rest is history, you know, and we grew from there. But, wow. So what would I have done differently? That's a tough one because, you know, I did what I, looking back on it, I probably would have done the same thing, you know, just work hard and everything and do what I did then. So, to turn the office around, when I first started. So,
Marty, how about you?
From my standpoint, I think it would have been to hold people accountable. When I look back at, you know, I'd never been in a management position before. When I came on board with David, I was a packaging mechanic and I never managed people before. And I pretty much trusted people to do what they did because I was a pretty trustworthy person and I just assumed other people were. So I made some bad hires and I kept them around for a long time. And I wasn't really measuring their progress or how they were doing very effectively. I mean, I obviously knew some things, but I should have held people a little bit more accountable and moved some out actually, you know, a little sooner. And because I had some people in the organization from time to time that stayed too long that really didn't fit in with the culture. And they stayed too long.
And I can relate to that.
And that hurt us. As a matter of fact, you know, we've almost shut down an office or two just because of bad hires.
This was as we are growing and moving forward and hiring more staff and so forth. You know, that's been a challenge for us, is hiring the right staff and holding them accountable and holding them to coming up with KPIs and metrics for them and so forth. You know, that's part of growing pains and managing the growth. So when I very first started Tile 25 years ago, it was just me and one other employee. And then I hired one other person just a few months later, but it was an experienced employee at the time, which was definitely beneficial to help with the growth, you know, when I first started.
Sure. So. They're David and Marty Luttrell, owners of 32 At-Work Personnel franchises around the country. Gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for sharing your secrets of staffing success and your incredible growth over the past 25 years, and continued success to you and everybody over At-Work Personnel.
Thank you, Todd.
Thank you, Todd. We
appreciate it.
My big thanks to David and Marty Luttrell there from At Work Personnel Services. You can check out more about them at lstaff.com. It's just the letter lstaff.com. I liked what they talked about with the brand ambassadors. We obviously focus so much on finding candidates these days, but that's kind of one of those overlooked areas, is really treating your candidates as brand ambassadors for your company. You know, you have a kind of a limited sales staff probably, but think about how many candidates that you have out there every day representing your company. You know, are you giving them branded t-shirts to wear? Are you giving them business cards? Do they know about your company? Could they sell your company to somebody? Do they know enough of the basics of your company to talk about it with other people? Now, you think about referrals, and obviously that's a great incentive to get your candidates to refer some of their friends into widen your candidate pool. But think about all the people that they come in contact with on the job. Maybe people who aren't happy with their current jobs, or people who are working for other staffing firms and aren't really happy with their position over there. So use your candidates. Teach them about your company. You know, maybe even give them a couple brochures, some candidate-focused brochures that they could hand out if somebody asks them, oh, I see you work for XYZ Staffing. You know, what's that all about? So really a great resource to use for all those hundreds of candidates you may have out in the field every day. That will wrap it up for us this week. Be sure to check out HaleyMarketing.com. Has all of our past episodes up there, as well up on iTunes, on Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. And of course, if you have an Apple device, you can just use the podcast app on there. Search for The Secrets of Staffing Success, and you can have all of our brand new episodes sent directly to your phone. Until next time, thanks for joining us on another episode of Secrets of Staffing Success.